Welcome to another round of Drawing Board or Miro Board. Today, we talk brainstorms with UX designer Brian. Let's go. First question. You thought you'd see everyone's idea in the team brainstorm, but you've got a grand total of one. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, right? Because in Miro, the team can add ideas now or later. And with Privacy Mode, we can keep them anonymous until they're good to share.
Correct. Next, you need the best way to explain your idea, but all you have is a few sticky notes. Drawing Board or Miro Board?
Drawing Board, because, you know, in Miro, I could record videos, add text, images, links, and digital sticky notes, of course, present my thoughts the way I want.
Right again! Now, you're looking for a past idea you thought was just genius. Only you could find... Oh, there it is. Drawing Board or...
Miro. All our finished and unfinished work lives in one place.
And he's won.
Join over 60 million people getting ideas noticed in Miro Brainstorms. Get your first three boards for free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Save big money on your entire roofing project now at Menards. Protect your home for years to come with Owens Corning Architectural Shingles. They offer long-lasting performance while providing ultimate protection with a 130 miles per hour wind rating and limited lifetime warranty. Choose from over 50 options of Owens Corning shingles in-store and on Menards.com. And check out more of our great deals going on now.
Save big money at Menards.
What is up, y'all? We are in here for another episode of Believe in Kentucky. My name is Vinny Hardy from the Cat's Paws. We got AG with us, Aaron Gershon. You can read his stuff on the catspaws.com, cranking out content. We got the QB1, Montgomery, Alabama's finest, Jalen Whitlow in the building. How's everybody doing, fellas?
Good, man. Good.
Yeah, man. Definitely doing well. Can't lie. I wouldn't say I thought it would be in New York, but I was partly hoping for it and selfishly ready to get a little bit of a break here, start doing some spring football and then, you know, getting a little bit of a break the next couple months. But it was definitely a heck of a trip to Greensboro, a lot going on there, and it's good to be home for a little bit.
No second weekend for the Cats. They fall to... Here we go, Kansas State again in the tournament. They're becoming a thorn in the side like UConn, because, you know, now K-State in 2018 in Atlanta, and, you know, the bracket had opened up that year, and now here we are, 2023, K-State in Greensboro, and Marquise Noel, the little kid, as Cal said, took over in the second half. Kentucky had no answer for that dude, and He dropped downs when he needed to. He got buckets when he needed to. And that was the difference in the game. And Kentucky's ice cold shooting, you know, too. Because they got out of rebounds but couldn't hit the shots. Jalen, you've been saying it for 3 weeks. Kentucky makes shots. If Kentucky can make shots. If Kentucky can make shots. Since we've been talking March Madness, I mean, we can go back to past three or four episodes. That's what you've been saying. And they were not able to.
Yeah, I mean, just watching that game, man, and we kind of spoke about it briefly before we got on, but definitely, you know, gave up too many open layups and open dunks, you know, not enough contested shots near the basket, I think, was the deciding factor in my eyes. Now, second was definitely, I mean, if you hit, you know, just a couple of those open shots when that game could have went either way. I mean, obviously it's easy to say, but the game could have went either way. You know what I'm saying? I think if they just hit a couple of them, you know, definitely was ice cold from three, which is in today's game. I mean, you can't win if you're ice cold from three. I mean, that's just the reality of it. You got to hit shots. And for some reason, I don't know if it's the approach. I don't know what the way they practice. I don't know, but they can't hit shots when it matters sometimes. And it kind of takes me back to, you know, football and, you know, hitting the big shots downfield. I remember, you know, being, as a player, as a coach, you know, you get in a rut sometimes where a couple weeks in a row you can't hit that big shot downfield on a deep post or deep vertical. And you want to, okay, what is it? Is it the way we coach it? Is it the way we practice? Is it the structure? Are we putting too much pressure on? Are we thinking about it too much? Are we hammering too much? They're doing something. He need to reevaluate what they're doing because everybody else in the country is hitting shots, right? The teams that are winning. So there has to be a level of shot making, you know, at the end of the day that can kind of level the playing field. You know, they play hard. You know, I think nobody can dispute how hard they played. And, you know, Oscar, how many rebounds did he have or whatever?
25 on third Friday and 18 on Sunday.
You know what I'm saying? So got guys under the basket willing to get the ball. Obviously, I don't know if you'll have that next year, like to that extreme. But, you know, but you got to hit shots, man. You got to have guys that make buckets. Even mediocre teams, good teams that don't typically, nobody really expects Michigan State to win it this year. But I watched the game. They had a couple guys who were getting buckets on their own, off the dribble, getting buckets. They're passing it to them. They're hitting shots. They're shooting off the dribble, three-pointers, right? Even like we talked about Knowles from whatever his name from Kansas State, creating his own shot, getting buckets from deep. Yeah, Kentucky doesn't have that. You know, just a guy who will get a bucket. And you have to have it at the end of the day, because at the end of the day, the game is won by teams who put the ball in the basket the most. So you got to have guys who can just get buckets. And, you know, the teams that I see that got a chance to really win it, especially Bama, 24 for Bama can get you a bucket when you need it. And he don't need a pick. He don't need a pick and roll. He don't need a pick and pop. He don't need any set for him. He can get you a bucket, right? And I think Kentucky was missing that, let alone we're missing the open shot. So, you know, rough one. But, again, if they just contend some of those shots at the basket, they still may win that game. But I think it was just too many easy points, easy two-pointers for Kansas State, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, you don't want to pick on Antonio Reeves too much, man, because he probably is the reason he even got to where maybe not even just got to the tournament. I mean, he was pretty damn consistent all year, but he just could not do anything, man. He got good looks. There was a layup that went like way over. He airballed the layup that luckily Chris cleaned up and dunked, but it was just one of those days for him, and I did feel for him, but the things that were preventable that you don't really have much sympathy for, like you said, the easy baskets. I thought, you know, they got beat back door a couple different times. Noel is such a crafty player, man. I mean, I don't know if I've seen a point guard like him in person at the college level before. Just 5'8", extremely fast, smart, you know, always knows where his guys are. And, you know, you give credit to not only him on that, but coaching and team chemistry, that there's always, you know, a mindset of, you know, where your guy's going to be, you know, just like in football when the quarterback's looking for you. So, I mean, he was a really tough matchup. I even think, you know, I heard a lot of people, oh, Sahvir Wheeler, if he was there, would change it. I don't think so. I just think that Noel kid's on a different level. But, you know, the one coaching decision that really didn't make sense, and I asked about it after the game, and Cal admitted basically that he miscalculated, was with 55 seconds left, you know, Oscar has the dunk and one, he makes the free throw, and Cal goes ahead, takes him out, and I forget who else, but the lineup was for the last minute of the second half when Kentucky was up one when he made the sub, was, I believe, Antonio Reeves, Chris Livingston, Adu Thierro, Lance Ware, and Damian Collins. And so Kansas State comes up the floor. Noel makes a layup at the basket. Okay, 33 seconds. And I see Cal is looking up at the clock because you're going to call a timeout, right, and get Oscar back in there. He doesn't call that timeout. They run down the court. They turn it over almost instantly. Kansas State gets a backdoor bucket, you know, behind Collins, you know, at the buzzer. And like that type of thing, you know, you go from being up one at halftime to maybe even up three if you can get a bucket from Oscar to being down three. And that's a Kentucky this year when I think they went 17-0 when leading at half. They went 2-0 when tied, and they went 3-12 when losing. So that could have just changed the entire mindset, entire mood in the locker room if you go up with that lead. And look, it stunk that Oscar was your main offense all year, but he did everything he could, and Kansas State had no answer for him, and you need to get his offense in the game. But Cal was so scared of him picking up that second foul when, meanwhile, at the same time, you know, Jerome Tang is playing Keontae Johnson with two fouls almost the entire first half. And Keontae arguably picked up a third underneath the basket and really a fourth for the offensive foul, but there was one play under the basket what they called the foul, and it was clearly on Keontae. And Noel is screaming, it was on one, and the refs call it on one. And it was like, man, you know, if that call goes on Keontae, he's got three at the half. So it was just that was a frustrating decision. And then, you know, you can't hit shots. Jacob Toppin had a terrible game offensively, but that his, you know, I think the criticism of him has been a little harsh because he played great defense on Keontae Johnson all game. Keontae Johnson, that was 13 points, was his lowest total in over a month. And, you know, the three hit at the end of the game is a tip your cap three. It wasn't a three that, you know, Antonio Reeves had some of those wide open looks that he just missed. So there are some frustrating things. This loss was preventable, but I think it really boils down to the unfortunate reality that Kansas State was the better team, and this Kentucky team was just too inconsistent to make a run this year.
Yeah, consistently inconsistent.
Yeah.
And for Reeves, his first two, I mean, he had a lot of good looks. His first two were down, halfway down, and came out. If one of those falls, maybe his whole day goes
whole mindset might be different.
But because I think I tweeted out. I was like, he's had two shots. His first two down, around, halfway, popped out. I was like, keep shooting. Just keep shooting. And I thought, I mean, as inconsistent as they have been, he's been on a nice little good streak. You know, we saw him at Fayetteville. You know, he a lot of argument. Maybe he should have been in the lineup doing what he was doing a lot sooner than he was.
Absolutely.
So I thought, well, you know, that's cool. He'll shake that off. He'll shoot himself out of it. And it just didn't happen for him. And so, you know, a lot of good looks. You mentioned the layup. And it's hate to just pile on him, but it was just a terrible day. Just, you know, like Chin Coleman said on the Collins show, just it's one of those days that just – they just weren't falling for him. So,
yeah, just a bad timing on that. But again, it comes down to some of that backdoor defense. Oscar, you know, God bless him, because what he did in both tournament games were awesome. But the pick and roll defense came back to bite again. And Noel even said after the game, we saw how he played pick and roll defense, and I was able to go downhill. And that was just like, I wrote the column after the game, man. Every little bit of issues that kind of sprinkled in to make this season frustrating kind of reared its ugly head, whether it was falling behind at half and not being able to bounce back, even though they did. But obviously still that mindset, you know, who knows what their mindset is. Maybe they even push on the brakes and never let go if they're go up at half. And then, you know, shots just not falling on any given night. There were so many games, most of their losses this year, you could chalk up to obviously some defensive things, but the shooting percentages were just awful in those games as well. The pick and roll defense, specifically with Oscar, the long scoring droughts, we saw that all year long, and that reared its ugly head again. There were like three or four 3-plus minute scoring droughts. So, you know, those can't happen in the NCAA tournament. And I'm blanking on the other two things that I'm pulling it up right here that I kind of harped on in there. Oh, the timeout and poor lineup decisions. We already talked all about that. And then the end of half meltdowns. That's the other one. And I mean, it goes hand in hand with what happened at the end of the first half, but you know, at the 3:20, which was the last media timeout, you still had a 1-point lead. You had a 1-point lead after the Lance Ware dunk. And, you know, that three by the kid off the bench, who is a good three shooter, as kind of his role in the team. You know, he hits one, a deep one, and then, you know, Keontae kind of hits the dagger to make it a 5-point game. And Kentucky, I think, went from the 2:43 mark until the 26-second mark between its field goals. So just really frustrating.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Wait, you said something about Oscar. I had something I was going to say, too. Maybe to come back to me, man. Did you have something else, Jalen, too?
No, man, not about that, man. I just think, you know, one of those things that, you know, I could tell that people are kind of fed up with the, you know, how people get after the season. Posting graphics of the next class coming in, man. Nobody wants to hear that.
Nobody wants to hear that, bro.
Like, I don't, like, even I don't want to hear it. And I know how good recruiting classes matter, but I think people sensationalize over recruiting classes, man. At the end of the day, these kids are 17, 18 years old. We don't know how they're going to pan out. A five-star may ride the bench and transfer. A five-star may come in and be a first-round draft pick. We just don't know. Like, you can't. It's important to recruit well. But in my opinion, you can't bank on recruiting classes. You got to bank on your culture and your coaching and your style of play that's going to get you consistent play year in, year out. I think if you just always bank on – and I'm not saying that they are inside the program. I'm saying that the way most fans see it, you know, they say, oh, we got this guy coming in. I mean, you say that every year. We say that every year. Bama football fans say that every year, right? The guys that they're posting about and, you know, the guy who lives in, you know, backwoods Alabama tweeting with the egg picture on Twitter talking about this guy's going to start, you know, end up transferring from Bama after the first or second year because they never see in the field. Let the kids, like, desensationalize, if that's a word, recruiting. Let the kids relax and come in and just be players, right? Focus on, I think everybody should focus on how are we better in the program, inside of the program, with the culture, with the coaching, with the style of play, with the discipline, with the detail. That's what matters. That's what gets Michigan State every year. Michigan State is going to compete for a title at some level. They're going to compete for a Big Ten title. They're going to compete for a national title at some level every year. Kansas at some level every year. Yes, they recruit well, but obviously the consistency shows you that it's something else going on. Right, so that's my thing, man. I had to get that off because I keep seeing people post about recruiting and this. You know, it don't matter who's coming in this year. It really don't. How are you going to develop that? You know, that's what matters.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And I mean, the other thing I worry about with this whole class next year, I wrote about a couple months ago, is you saw the pressure that built up on this team, which is the oldest team that Cal's ever had at Kentucky. I don't know about ever, but probably ever, at least since he's been at Memphis and Kentucky. What do you think the pressure is going to be on 17 and 18 year old kids, man? It's going to be enormous. And we saw, like you said, Jalen, right after the game, people are tweeting the graphic of all five of these McDonald's All-Americans. We're all be in Houston next week covering them, and I look forward to that. But that's one of the things. Like, I don't know if I'll have time to ask it next week, but they're going to have the weight of their world to bring this team back to the Final Four. And they're also, you know, a lot of people are calling it next year's the Calipari legacy year, right? You had half of his tenure where it was one of the best rides in Kentucky basketball history. You know, four Final Fours in 5 years, a national championship, another national championship game appearance. And then the last half, you know, really ever since after 2015, from 2016 on, it's not been Kentucky basketball, especially these last, you know, 3 years. It has not been Kentucky basketball. It's been, if you've had the last 3 years they've had, which has been, you know, the awful 9-16, a 2 seed, but you get upset by St. Peter's, and then around a 32, if you're Kansas State, you're happy about it. You know, you're feeling, well, man, we have an up and coming program. If you're Kentucky, you're like most fans, you're pissed off. And I get that. So I just wonder what it's going to be like for those kids, knowing not only do they have the pressure of, you know, a pissed off fan base, you know, a coach who's kind of trying to cement his legacy as a positive one at the end of the day, and also just winning games, man. I mean, it's going to be – and that non-conference schedule next year, and we see what the SEC is. It's a beast, and it's only getting better. Like, we can question Chris Beard and Nate Oates as people, but they're going to bring their – you know, Alabama's going to be good again next year. Ole Miss probably going to be good again – is going to be back in good year one under Beard with the portal. So the SEC is a beast, but you got Gonzaga. You got Michigan both coming in. You're going to play Kansas in the Champions Classic. You're playing, I think, Carolina in the CBS. You're going to play probably Duke or one of those, you know, better ACC teams in the new ACC SEC challenge that's going to replace the Big 12 challenge. You got Notre Dame, who just hired Penn State's head coach, who's done an outstanding job on a neutral. So that's a hell of – it's just going to be a I don't want to hear – if they're going to play this event in Canada and if they go out and they light it up, don't like, overhype them. Don't put the pressure of the world on them. Let's see how things go. And, you know, this is a really young team. And, look, this recipe worked for Cal early in his tenure. But now with the transfer portal, you have teams that are – they just have grown men. Look at Tennessee, man. And I hate to, you know – use them as an example, and Kentucky fans are already mad, but they got grown-ass men on that team, and that's why they're where they're at. Even Kansas State, that's a very, really, really veteran team. They didn't have any freshmen that played. I don't know if any freshmen played in that game against Kentucky the other day. And even, you know, pretty much if you look at every roster in the Sweet 16, they got a bunch of veterans, and they might have some freshmen in there, like Arkansas with Black and Nick Smith Jr., but they have a bunch of veterans and transfer portal guys around them. Gonzaga's got Drew Timmy, who's in year 8. I mean, they got it's just going to be really interesting to see how it goes. So it's all going to come down to mindset. It's going to come down to, you know, being able to handle the pressure. And it's also going to be up to Cal to put some pieces, get some of those guys from this year back, especially Reeves and Livingston, and also get a couple complimentary portal pieces that fit next year's roster better than the ones he picked up last year in this roster.
Y'all made a bunch of good points. Especially, I'm not a huge recruiting guy anyway. I just kind of once they get in and commit and they're there, then I'll start checking you out. So I'm definitely not gonna be check the portal every day because this dude right. might be. Oh. I'm not that dude. I'm not gonna be that guy. But your point about the pressure on this freshman class. And then you have the added pressure, if that's even possible. We saw, and this is how, look, the fan base loves the in-state kids. We saw what happened with Dante Allen. We want to see him. See the Reed Shepherd is coming in, Mr. Basketball, but he's also the son of a former Cat who was on two national championship teams. His dad, Jeff, won two titles here. Mr. Basketball here. He's coming in as a legacy kid, so that's going to be even more pressure. They're going to want to see him play, going to want to see him do well. Why isn't Reed playing? Reed needs for a minute. That's a whole nother layer already, and we've already seen the graphics for these freshmen like y'all have talked about. So it is going to be insane pressure on them, and it's not going to be fair at all. You guys mentioned some of the points about the game, too. Being so inconsistent, being ahead and then going to the half, having a deficit. You talk to former players who have, you know, Tony Delk hosted this with me. He was the most outstanding player at the 96 Final Four. He knows about stringing together tournament wins. Kentucky was up 8 early. They were up 15-7. Kansas State couldn't throw it in the ocean. That was a time to kind of separate, get that up to 10, 12, 14. It didn't happen. Just like y'all said, they were down at halftime. They get up 8 again in the second half, 39-31. Step on them, and that's when you extend your lead. Cameron Mills has been on these. All these guys will tell you, when we're up 8, we want to get it to 12. The next 4 minutes media session, we want to get it to 15. Consistently just build on the lead, continue to outscore them, continue to get stops, continue to pull away and just take their will. And this team never had that killer instinct, you know, close games, the execution, the putting teams away when you have a chance. You know, it's a lot of times they have a lead and it would get shaky at the end where, the LSU game, they hung on and won. Stuff like that. So it was just a lot of that all year, you know, chemistry, injuries, whatever, you know, not on the same page with the whole, there's a whole lot of stuff going on. And it's probably, that's why you're one game, and then you're out in Greensboro.
Yeah.
Speaking of, had you been there? What was Greensboro like? I'd never been
No, I had not been there. It was nice. I mean, I have no complaints. There was nothing that the nice way of putting it, it was nothing like special. It was nothing like, but it was super nice, super clean. Everyone was really friendly and welcoming. The media hotel was way too fancy to be a media hotel. It was like So I don't even know how to describe it, man, but they would have freaking tea parties in the afternoon. Like, am I making this up? They had a carriage out front for show. They had jazz music at all times. They had live jazz music. It was bizarrely nice for a media hotel. If you're going to be stuck somewhere for 5 days, it was a pretty good place to be because it was super nice in there. And again, really friendly. So no, Greensboro, there's definitely some good food spots that we hit. And, Jeff Picoro took me to this Italian place two different times on that trip. So yeah, so it was a good time. I mean, it was a good, the NCAA tournament for the media is a good time to kind of just celebrate also just getting through the whole season, football combined for those who cover both, and it's kind of the end and, a lot of fun. So, got to go out for dinner almost every night and hang out with a lot of those guys before, go to get to the summer mode and, see them as much, throughout the summer months. So no, it was a good trip. And unfortunately it ended Sunday. We're definitely talking about plans for New York and hoping that was going to happen. And for me specifically to go home, see some of my buddies that live in the city, see my dad up there, but it didn't work out that way. But I keep telling everyone this, man, my brother is an FAU student and is going to New York for the game tomorrow night. Could you imagine before the year saying, yeah, my brother's an FAU student, he's going to go to the Sweet 16 in March, I cover Kentucky, and I'm going to be sitting on my couch watching. So it's nutty. It's a wild year in college basketball, but it was fun. Greensboro was a good time. I'm glad we didn't have to leave, after Friday, like last year.
That's true. That's true. So you a foodie too, then?
Of course. Yeah. Oh, no, man. There are a couple of good places that we went to out there, a couple of local places. So it was a good trip. It was a nice little town to be in, and weather wasn't too cold. So it was pretty good.
Good deal. Good deal. So like you said, it all Sweet 16 ramps up tomorrow night. And we'll have the Thursday, Friday going on into the weekend. And we're on the outside looking in, but we'll see how it plays out. A lot of new blood in there, if you will, FAUs and all that type of stuff. So we'll see if the Cinderella stuff can last. It's always fun the first weekend and then they get beat down the second weekend. Can somebody break on through and really make some noise? I have a Butler getting to the championship game against Duke and that kind of stuff a few years ago. So we'll see. We'll see. Does that put a bow on basketball? We slide on over?
Yeah, I think, there'll be plenty to talk about in the coming weeks. We'll get some decisions in here. We'll get, obviously there's going to be a change or two on the coaching staff, KT Turner leaving. So, we'll see what happens there and kind of take it day by day. I mean, I'll be at the McDonald's All-American next week, so I'll have stuff from that, during that trip. But, yeah, I think, it's football for the next couple of weeks, and we'll kind of hit the basketball news as we come to it.
And before we get to football, gotta give UK baseball props. They're ranked, won 18 in a row. Look, Coach Mins needed this.
He did.
He's getting it. They're stacking wins. They're gonna have some rough patches in conference play because the SEC is a monster.
Oh,
but stack these wins. You already swept Mississippi State. You're winning midweek games this year that you were letting slip away last year. Good for them. Happy to see it. Keep it rolling. And hey, congrats so far. And
absolutely
snuck into that top. Yeah,
they are, man.
I saw some of those scores, man. I'm like, I need whatever they got.
Yeah, dude, they are fun right now. I've been to a couple games already, and they play a lot of small ball, so we'll see how that kind of translate when they play some of the better teams in the SEC. But, hey, man, it's a lot of fun right now, and hopefully, the weather gets warmer. Alcohol is allowed at KPP. They're selling it, get some more people out to that beautiful ballpark because it's been far too quiet in there. The last first four or five seasons it's been open, and, it's a beautiful place that has been underappreciated. So, yeah, man, they're rolling right now, and The SEC, though, if Kentucky and Missouri are both good, as like it looks right now, because Missouri just swept Tennessee, it's like 12 to 13 teams deep of tournament teams. It's just it's ridiculous how good it is. So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, and the Cats getting pitching too, getting timely pitching. When I mean, they executing, getting whatever they need, they've been able to, you know, to come through. So been able to find a way. So good stuff. And good to see that for Coach Mins. Spring football, man, the week off, spring break is over. Everybody's back now. You know, got all kind of stuff. Guys on the mics, people talking, Liam talking. We've been listening to the interviews. We've been watching it. So what's been y'all's takeaways?
Save big money on your entire roofing project now at Menards. Protect your home for years to come with Owens Corning architectural shingles. They offer long-lasting performance while providing ultimate protection with a 130 miles per hour wind rating and limited lifetime warranty. Choose from over 50 options of Owens Corning shingles in-store and on Menards.com. And check out more of our great deals going on now.
Save big money at Menards.
My biggest takeaway so far, first, I said this in a group chat today, is about how much Cohen has given up in the press conferences. I think he's fun to listen to because he's telling it like it is, and he's not afraid to give information. So he's fun to listen to. But I think the biggest thing is those guys trying to piece things together. And like I said this a while ago, or maybe a couple shows ago, that I'm not sure if they're going to get, you know, from what I'm hearing and what the clips that I've seen, you know, I'm not sure if they're going to get a big drop off in the passing game with Leary, you know, taking over for Levis. I mean, from what I'm hearing and what the players are saying and what the coaches are saying, he seems to be on point. It's just about putting the guys around him in the right place and make sure everybody gels and everybody's on one accord. And like Liam was talking about, okay, who's going to be that intermediate dig route, cross route runner? Who's going to take the top off the defense, you know, the deep post, the deep overs, right? The deep, you know, verticals, the double move shot guys, who are going to be those guys? But I think, you know, from a player athlete, you know, talent standpoint, seems like they're pretty pleased with what's going on. I think now it's just about putting guys in the right place. Now, you're going to have some movement with the transfer portal. You're going to have guys, you know, who aren't playing, want to leave. You're going to have guys come into the program. So I think that'll be very interesting. But I'm anxious to see what happens as we progress throughout spring ball, because I'm really excited to see how this offense looks throwing the football. I think they're going to get back to, you know, what they want to do on the ground. I'm anxious to see how they look throwing the football, because I think – they have talent and experience at receiver that, you know, hadn't been there for a while. And you got a quarterback who can sling it. You got a quarterback who experienced, you know, it's going to be his fourth year, you know, behind the center, you know, when he was NC State, now he's at Kentucky. So I'm anxious to see how it looks, man. I like the offense. I like the style of play. I've been watching that Rams style since 2018 with Sean McVay. And now you got Liam Cohen, you know, running the show. I'm anxious to see how that looks. Will they incorporate more RPO stuff with Leary? Will they place him in the shotgun a little bit more than they did at Levis? I'm thinking so. But I'm anxious to see how it looks. I think they do a good job of changing tempos. They do a good job of taking shots downfield, being aggressive, you know, taking advantage of personnel on the perimeter. I really like what they do on offense, and I think they got the quarterback to do it. They got the receivers to do it. It's the big thing is going to be, you know, piecing things together up front to make sure you can protect your biggest asset, which is your quarterback. So I'm anxious to see how that looks. I'm really loving what I'm hearing from the players. You know, they all seem eager, motivated. Yep. They all seem, you know, optimistic. They all seem very positive, very excited about what's going on offense. From what I'm hearing, they're really efficient right now. The ball's not on the ground very much. The ball's not in the defense's hand very much. So as a coordinator, quarterback, coach, that's always really good to hear. So we'll see how this thing progresses. I think is from what I'm hearing, it's going really good. So let's see how this thing continue to move forward.
Yeah, man, I was at open practice yesterday, and I remember last year's open practice at this time and being very, very worried about the offense. And I didn't even think it was that big of an overreaction because it was messy and there was some bickering and it was not good. The ball, like you said, Jalen, it barely hit the ground. The two plays I remember hitting at the ground were a drop and a tip ball that got picked off by Maxwell Harrison. That's probably a good thing that the defense is making plays anyway. So, I mean, it was very impressive. Devin Leary, I think, and something I found really interesting 2 weeks ago was that Berrion Brown and Dane Key talked to us, and they really made it a point that they really liked the touch on his ball. And it wasn't that, you know, they were trying to take a shot at Will for having too much on it. I mean, but look, in the college game, some of these guys can't handle the fastballs that the pros can. I think that's what's going to help make Will a really good NFL quarterback, but maybe that's why, you know, there were some plays that got dropped in his 2 years here. You know, guys like Wandale Robinson, who ended up being a pro, can handle it. Guys like Dane Key and Berrion Brown, who are on that trajectory, can handle it. But some of the guys who are kind of just good college players, maybe not so much. So it was very interesting to hear that. And then you watch practice yesterday. The touch, I mean, not only does he have great touch on the ball, he is insanely accurate. I mean, he hit a couple tight windows to Dane over the middle. He hit Brandon White a lot over the middle. I thought that was very interesting. And Brandon White is not a big dude. He's smaller than Wandale. So that tells you the ball has got to be pretty accurate. So I was very, very, very impressed with Devin Leary and the way he was slinging it and the receiver room. Really, everyone in the receiver room, you know, wide receiver-wise, it was good. I was really – Kamani Anderson, the four-star tight end, who, you know, he's getting a lot of reps because it's only him and Isaiah Cummings right now because everyone else is out, you know, nursing their injuries with Bates. Bates was moving a little bit, but I didn't even see Dingle or Caddis there. But that dude did not look like a freshman. That dude was not catching the ball like a freshman. So that was really intriguing and cool to see. Isaiah did some good things, had a couple drops that – you know, you definitely want to see get cleaned up, but he's getting a lot of an opportunity right now to kind of reestablish himself in that room. And then, you know, the offensive line, I like that. I like the idea of Jagger Burton at center. I just think he's very athletic. I think, you know, he was up and down at guard, but that athleticism showed up because his best game of the season was against Georgia and defending Jalen Carter and those boys. So, you know, I do like that move. I think Eli Cox was so good at guard that you want to get him back into that spot. He was a midseason All-American. So it'll be interesting to see kind of how the offensive line goes. But, you know, from what I saw yesterday, it looked pretty good up front. It looked a lot smoother than last year. And then defensively, which is shocking, I came away – the defensive line is humongous and fast, and I'm not worried about the defensive line. Or safety. The two positions I was a little concerned about were corner, and then the inside linebackers, not named Trevin Wallace and De'Aaron Jackson. You know, the cornerbacks, Maxwell Harrison definitely looks like he's improved. Andrew Phillips is kind of about the same, but those were the two guys starting at the outside spots. So, you know, J.Q. Hardaway was working with the second team. Jordan Robinson, who was a D2 transfer last year, working with the second team. And they had Jansen Dunn with the third. So you definitely want to see that room get better. Or maybe they kind of do what they did last year and add to that room in the portal, you know, once that opens back up. And I think they're definitely going to have to add a body at inside linebacker because, you know, Trevin and D-Jack you feel really good about. But as you saw last year, injuries pop up. And if you lose one or two of them, man, I mean, Luke Fulton is a special teamer, and no offense to him, but just is not going to give you what those two guys are going to give you. And then they had a walk-on in London Kraft playing over Martez Thrower, a former third three-star. So you definitely want to add a body, I think, in the inside linebacker and the cornerback room, if not multiple bodies, you know, once that portal opens up. So those were really my only two concerns watching that practice yesterday. But, yeah, motivated group. They were loose, you know, a lot of laughing, a lot of smiles from the coaches and players alike. Devin Leary definitely looked the part, and they're working hard on special teams, man. I don't know what special teams practices were when you were there, Jalen, but from what I've seen the last 4 years, special teamers kind of do a lot of nothing. They're getting live kicks. They're doing gunner drills. They're Jay Bulwer screaming his head off. They're getting into it. They are not going to let that crap happen again, you know, this season. So that was kind of fun too.
That's good, man. That's good because like you said, special teams. And I think Berrion Brown said it in his last interview how, you know, special teams has been intense and, you know,
yeah,
can definitely lose, you know, win or lose your game. So, but yeah, like I said, personnel wise, man, I think they'll get in the portal. So I'm going to be interested to see what they bring in.
Yeah.
They'll definitely get in the portal this, you know, definitely at DB.
They got to.
With Tisdale, and I don't know what his deal is. Yeah. I was thinking, I saw him on the sideline last year, and you never see this in college, ever. I saw him, and this is what I think, this is part of what Stoops was saying in his first, in his introductory to spring interview, when he was talking about getting back to what they've been doing, you know, getting back to his core. You saw a player on the sideline in a college game with street clothes on. I've never seen that.
Really?
I've never seen that. I always seen a player with some sort of gear on with Kentucky or whatever school it is, whether it was a sweatshirt, a hoodie, or a jersey, or whatever. He had, like, you would have thought you got him out of the mall. he had a bubble coat on with, like, an orange, like a, you know, it was totally unrelated to Kentucky football gear. Which is shocking. Wow. I've never seen that in college from a player who's currently on the team, but he's just injured. So obviously they got loose with some stuff. And, you know, maybe that guy was just one of those guys that they were like, you know, let's just not piss him off. Let's try to keep him, make sure we keep him. I'm sure that was a little bit going on, but whatever he did was bad enough to, you know, Stoops is a guy who he's not going to kick you off. So whatever he did was he deserved it. whatever he did, he deserved it. Because from the Stoops that I know, he's not going to kick you off the team unless you really do something where you deserve to be kicked off. So maybe it was like the 14th strike and they had to finally just like, look, man, I'll let you go. So I don't know what he did. You know, I'm not sure what the rumors are. They're not really, you know, I looked it up and kind of asked around or whatever. They're keeping it tight to the vest. So whatever he did was bad enough to where, you know, they let him go and, you know, and they're not even speaking about it. You know, they're not even like, nobody's saying anything about it. You can tell they had a meeting, a team meeting, like, look, we're not speaking about this. We're moving on. So, you know, I saw Coach Morrow under his comments was like, you know, this is not the end or whatever. So I don't know what the dude did. Whatever he did, he deserved to be kicked off because the Stoops that I know don't kick guys off the team unless you really F up, you know. Yeah. So he must have really did it.
Yeah, definitely unfortunate. But, you know, I feel like he's probably going to go back into that nickel slot, though. There are guys to beat out in that room with the way they played last year. So, you know, obviously you don't want to make light of that loss because he did do a lot of good things when he was on the field, you know, in 2020. But, you know, Alex Safari is a guy who played pretty damn well as a freshman last year. Andrew Phillips, if you have to, is definitely a guy that can play nickel. So, but it's a loss, and they definitely – I think they got to add – last year I think they added two bodies in the transfer portal in the summer with Kedron Smith and Zion Childers. I think you got to probably do the same thing again. And then instead of the running backs that they added last year, it's probably going to be attention on middle linebacker. And then we'll see what the offense looks like, if there are any injuries that pop up. But you got to feel really good about the receiver room, especially some of the guys who aren't even on campus yet, like Shamar Porter. You feel good about the running back room, assuming there's all health there. And you feel really good about the tight end and quarterback spot. So it's also going to be, you know, the other angle of that is who's going to leave after spring ball when they don't see there's a role for them. So that's another thing to keep an eye on. That always happens everywhere. So it's going to be another free agency period come May 1st, but it'll be an important one for UK to add some bodies.
Yeah. My, I'll go ahead, Vinny.
I was just saying, for sure. Yeah, go ahead. I got a question for you after you finish though, but go ahead.
No, I was gonna say it's not a concern, but what I'm looking forward to the most is to see who develops at that quarterback position behind Leary. That is the biggest to me. That's the most important thing they got going on in offseason. Outside of OL, outside of offensive line, the backup quarterback position is the most important thing. Because whoever's the third guy is gonna transfer. So
I agree. Most,
you know, whoever's that third guy, he's gonna leave. So the backup, how are they developing behind Devin Leary? And I'm super excited to see it because I know whoever wins that second spot has really taken a leap. I truly, you know, out of all, you know, like I told you, I'm a nerd, man, when it comes to film and everything. And I truly trust anybody, any quarterback who's the backup with Liam Cohen as the quarterback coach or Sean McVay as an offensive coordinator. Whoever's the backup, I know that they can play because I really like the system. I think it develops quarterbacks really well. I mean, Jared Goff was not a world beater who went to the – he went to the Super Bowl. I know he had good defense, but, you know, he went to the Super Bowl. And he wasn't – like I said, he was a good quarterback, but he's not a world beater.
No.
So I'm really anxious to see what happens with that backup quarterback position because I think, you know, obviously – you want to get in games where you can kind of blow teams out early, the teams that you're supposed to beat bad, so you can get this guy some reps. And I'm anxious to see how that looks because if it's Wade, the offense may look a little bit different and not too much different, but he brings an extra element to the game. And if it's Kaya, I'm anxious to see how he developed from the pocket with his just overall confidence because I think he can play. I just want to see how confident is he, you know, being on time with the ball, throwing the ball with accuracy and timing, and trusting what he's seeing. I'm really excited to see that. I think that, and I'm sure they're not going to say it, but Stoops, Cohen, they're really, really, really locked in on that thing right there, the backup quarterback position, because they know that. I mean, you want this guy to be your starter next year. You know, this is what you want in 2024. You want this guy to be able to be your starter. So this is going to be really important because now, okay, if somebody transfers, the third guy usually transfers, okay, who are they going to bring in and can he beat out the second guy? You know, is he going to be the starter for 2024? So I'm anxious to see how that looks because as a coach, I want my starter for 2024 on my roster in the summer. I want that because I need to develop him. I don't want to live in a world where I'm continually bringing guys from the transfer portal to play 1 or 2 years. I want a guy who's homegrown in my system. So we'll see how that goes, man. I was just anxious to, you know, get that off my chest. Cause I've been thinking about that because I've been watching videos. I'm like, okay, I wonder who's really winning that job because that's a competition in itself.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And I'll tell you, as of Tuesday, Kyle was the 2, Deuce Hogan was the 3, and Destin Wade was the 4. So that was very interesting, to say the least. I thought Wade would probably be 2 or 3. I wouldn't have guessed Deuce Hogan kind of being in that mix. But look, Deuce Hogan won the job last year out of camp. He was the number 2 out of camp. And he was the one who ended up being the 3 and Kaya being the 4 by the end of the year. So, you know, maybe they're higher on him than we've kind of given credit for. But I will say from what I saw of those 3, Kaya looked pretty good. He did make one boneheaded decision that got picked off by Tyrese Fairbury. But for the most part, looked pretty good. Deuce Hogan made a couple good throws. And with Destin, man, they didn't throw the ball much when he was in there. He was running it. So, but I just can't imagine him. You would think between Kaya and Deuce, it would be the more likely option if a guy's going to portal out, especially if Kaya doesn't get that job because, you know, Destin's got the family angle there. Keaton's going to get playing time for sure. So, you know, would that be a package deal? Would the coaching staff really want to, you know, risk losing Keaton? So who knows what's going to happen there, but you're right, Jalen, it's super important because, you know, they got really lucky that they ended up getting, you know, 1 or 2, number 1 or number 2 in the portal, depending on where you look, in Devin Leary this year, but who knows if they're going to be so lucky next year where, you know, the guy that's kind of falls into their lap or the guy, you know, that is highly coveted is going to pick them when he has the entire country interested. So it is definitely important they at least have a guy they're comfortable with, you know, heading into 24, if not a guy they know they can win with.
All right. I agree.
Barry M. Brown said that he was a, you know, a go route type of receiver. That's just what he, you know, that's his favorite route. So what's your favorite route to throw, Jalen? You hear quarterbacks all the time. He can make all the throws. He can miss it. Sometimes they can. Sometimes they can't. But what was your favorite route to throw? Or what is your favorite route to throw?
Favorite route to throw? Oh, man. Probably a post. You know, a deep post. And that probably stems from, you know, my high school days because we ran a lot of posts. Teams kept falling for the same concepts. I don't know why. And we just kept hitting them with it. But we ran a lot of post. But yeah, I like throwing post, man. I hit a lot of post at Eastern. Didn't hit as many at Kentucky as I wanted to, but at Eastern, our offensive coordinator, he was pretty good. So he realized that I was pretty good at throwing them. We had good receivers running them, and you know, we were hitting them. So definitely a post, you know. So I'm anxious to see how they who takes that that kind of Wandale role. And I'm sure it's probably gonna be Berrion. And I'm sure they're gonna, because in that offense, they threw a lot of posts, man. A lot of deep overs and a lot of posts. So I'm anxious to see. But yeah, for me, it's definitely throwing a deep post, 100%.
Cool. So yeah, man, just had to, when I heard him say that, I was like, well, I gotta just see from the, you know, quarterback perspective, you know,
yeah,
you might have a favorite route to throw. I'm sure they all y'all do, you know,
yeah,
so like the outs or deep outs or whatever. But so I had to throw that out there before we finished up this episode, for sure. Just a couple little notes, man, but sad notes, but you know, guy was before y'all's time. I was a kid when he was here. Cedric Jenkins, if y'all maybe seen the tweets.
Yeah.
Played for Kentucky in the mid to late 80s. 6'11 center out of Georgia, McDonald's All American. Most famous play was a tip in at the last second to beat Louisville. He was here when Rex Chapman was here. They were teammates. Reggie Hansen, who's been on here, played with him, but he passed away. 57 years old. Hated to see that. Was battling illness. So hated to see and hear about Cedric Jenkins. They called him Swoop. There's the tip ins on YouTube and just look, it was against Louisville. So everybody and every Kentucky fan is going to remember that play to beat the Cardinals. I was like 9, but I mean, just remember seeing it and you know, thankfully there, you know, you can pull it up on YouTube. And look, Aaron, man, from you being from the Northeast, of Willis Reed, man, Knicks fan, and everybody, no matter what generation of age you are, has seen Willis Reed come out of that tunnel.
Yep.
Hit those two jumpers, and you know, they beat Wilt and the Lakers. Walt Frazier and the rest of the Knicks took it from there, but he hit the jumpers, and that was the Knicks were hyped. They went about to lose this game 7 because Willis was no way he's going to play, and he drug his leg and his injured self out there and gave what he had. And
yeah, you know,
the last title the Knicks got. But he was the spark for that, man. And so, I mean, you know, anytime anybody's hurt, anytime anybody comes back, oh, he's pulling the Willis Reed. It's a verb. You're pulling the Willis Reed because of what Willis Reed did 50 years ago in the finals, man. But hate to see that he passed away, too.
Yeah, I hate to see it, too. I definitely grew up learning about him. And I think we even had a signed picture of him in the house at one point. So, so definitely hate to hear that. I did not expect that one I didn't know too much about both. I knew a lot about Willis. I didn't know much about the other gentleman who passed away, but Dick Gabriel was telling some stories the other night and got to learn more about that. And you mentioned what happened against Louisville. So, you know, Cedric Jenkins, that was really sad and way, way too young.
Yeah. And you mentioned Louisville the week before, you know, Felton Spencer passed away. Played for Louisville right about that same era in the 80s. I remember back when they used to do barnstorming, you know, high school all-stars, whatever, they would go, you know, all over the state. And I'm from Southeastern Kentucky, like 3 hours from Lexington. But my dad took me up. I think it was Kaywood High School, but Felton Spencer was there. He's the first 7-footer I ever saw in person. I'm like 7, 8 years old and just, oh my God. And you know, he's talking, just big, gentle, giant, nice dude. As a player, people didn't think he would be that good. He sat on the bench for like 3 years behind Purvis Ellison, went and played for the Timberwolves, played 12 years in the league. Nobody would have ever thought he would have amounted to that as a player. But as a first, second grader, I remember going to this exhibition And just, you know, I never seen a 7-footer in person. You know, you've seen him on TV before. I was just being fascinated, but like, this dude is 7 feet tall. I'm just, so it was, you know, I always remember that and just hated to hear that he passed away too. Kind of young, in his 50s, you know, same kind of thing. So just not trying to bring the whole podcast down, but just condolences to all of the families of all those things. Guys. Yeah.
For sure.
I think we got everything in. We was trying to get all the notes from spring practice, from the interviews, Aaron, you there, getting sound at all these events from Greensboro right back to the practice field, right there standing beside Liam Cohen with your phone recording him. So we see you everywhere, man, and you always bringing good stuff and putting out good articles, man. Just everybody appreciates that. And Jalen, you and your nerding out self continuing to check out film and break down offenses and what you're saying, man. Appreciate everything y'all bring every week.
Yeah, for sure, man. I want to say this, though. I think this year, this is my too early prediction of the SEC, how this thing's going to go.
Ooh.
This year, it's going to be, I think, everybody on the East and the West side of the SEC, everybody is going to beat up on everybody this year. It's going to be a really I think it's going to be one of the most competitive years, because I think I can't think of one team that you could just roll out and beat. You know, maybe the easy thing to say is Vandy. That's the easy one. But even Vandy,
they're getting better.
Kentucky. I mean, you know, so I think Florida's going to be down a little bit, but you know, everybody else, even Missouri, can beat you. You know, and I think it's one of those things where everybody else on the West can beat anybody in the West too. I don't think Bama's going to stand over everybody. I don't think LSU is going to stand over everybody, even though I think LSU is probably going to be the best team in the West this year, pound for pound. But I think it's going to be one of those years where Texas A&M is going to knock off somebody really big. Missouri is going to knock off somebody. South Carolina is going to knock off Georgia potentially. Tennessee could potentially knock off Georgia. Kentucky can potentially – somebody's going to knock Georgia off this year. And it's going to – I think it's going to be one of those things where this is going to be one of those years where it's going to be hard as hell to pick who's your top four. It's going to be hard as hell to decide who's going to the SEC championship game when we're like halfway through the season, because I think people going to – I think dominoes are going to fall this year big time. I think you're going to see – you're going to see some teams, some big-time teams like Bama and potentially LSU, or LSU and potentially Bama, take some L's, because I think it's going to be that much parity in the SEC.
Yeah. I think that's the one great thing about the transfer portal, is that it brings instant parity. Teams like Auburn, who have a new coaching staff that is probably better than the other, they're stacking up real quick. And you see, I mean, look at what Sonny Dykes did at TCU, man, going through the portal and then bringing the offensive scheme he had. He got him into the national championship game year one. And that, you know, we're seeing it in college basketball right now. St. John's is going to be in the tournament next year. I can guarantee you that. Georgetown is probably going to be in the tournament next year. Notre Dame might be in the tournament next year. So, you know, and you're seeing the same thing with college football, man. Rebuilding is easier than ever. Look how quickly Lane Kiffin got Ole Miss off the ground, man. I mean, they're another one of those teams in the West that are probably in the middle, but they can beat anyone on a given Saturday. So that is one thing with the transfer portal, where surely if you handle business right, which for the most part coaches have done a pretty good job, I think, especially in this conference, both basketball and football, you can win some games pretty quick.
Yeah, I think Auburn's gonna be a scary matchup, because that, you know, you can say what you want about Hugh Freeze, but he can coach some football.
He can coach football.
he can make his quarterbacks play well, and he can recruit, man. So, you know, I know sometimes the recruiting could be a little bit edgy over there.
They can
get those players, but at the end of the day, I really do believe that this is going to be a year for the books in SEC. I really believe that. I just, you know, now the same teams may end up coming out on top, maybe. I don't know. But I think those teams, it's going to be hard to decipher who's 1, 2, 3, 4 in this league.
Makes sense.
And I think it's going to be a whole bunch of parity. Yeah. So
it was hard last year, let alone what it's going to be this year.
Yeah. It's going to be, you know, because We know how, you know, Kentucky's coming back strong this year. You know, I feel that Tennessee's coming back strong. You know, I think they're here to stay. Georgia obviously is here to stay. Ole Miss is no easy out for anybody because they got a really good coach and they're going to have a really good quarterback with a really good offense, and they always got good players. Mississippi State is going to be a question mark a little bit. Texas A&M will be
a good defense. Yeah. That's for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Texas A&M will upset some people this year. I really do believe that. They're not letting that happen again. They got players. They got a really good offensive coordinator. You know, I just
he's an old smart, but he's good.
Yeah,
I just wonder, is it enough offense for him and Jimbo to coexist? I just wonder.
Yeah,
I watched Jimbo's interview yesterday. He every time they asked him about the offense, he got chippy, man. he got chippy. Yeah, because that's his baby, and
yeah, it is.
He was like he was forced to bring somebody else in to kind of, you know, get that thing back on track. So he got chippy every time they asked him about it. So they're gonna come out with some. They're gonna come out spending five this year.
They should. I just don't. Bobby go back to being an assistant? I mean, he's been a head coach for a long time. I know you got to check your ego and all that. Will he? That's two headstrong dudes. And he got chippy with an interview about his offense. You think he's not going to be chippy about Bobby running his offense? I don't know, man.
I agree. I believe that. I thought about this yesterday. I would love to be in one of those meetings. I bet you could grab some popcorn, man. It's entertaining because I know they go at it.
Yeah. Oh, man.
I've heard stories personally with coaches that I know personally who used to go at it with Jimbo, man. Jimbo's a fiery dude.
Yes.
I bet Mark Stoops has some, right? That they obviously he was his DC a little bit there.
I'm sure they do. I'm sure, you know, there's a lot of coaches that I know, not a lot, but a few of them that I know Jimbo, and they always, they go at it, man. And those beatings aren't always, you know, that's the thing about you dealing with, you know, high-level coaches and everybody's job on the line, nobody want to move their family. Everybody's job on the line, so it's a very high level, very high stress level, very highly competitive. And those coaches go at it because every little decision matters because everything's on the line. So I'm anxious to see it, man. I'm anxious to see what happens. I wouldn't be shocked if they, you know, Trino coming to a game on a Saturday evening with a black eye, from fighting Jimbo in the meeting.
Yeah, man. Maybe it'll go smooth, but it's got a chance to be combustible. It's got a chance for fireworks to me.
I agree.
I'll say this on a Kentucky perspective, and then we can get out of here. And I'm sure we'll talk about it a lot throughout the offseason and when the SEC makes a decision. But they are motivated to finally get the damn division this year because it is going to get a hell of a lot. We don't know how the landscape's going to work. Is it going to be single division? Are they going to put Alabama and Auburn in the East? You know, who are you going to play every year? If it becomes a 9-game schedule, it's going to be really hard for Kentucky just because they are in that middle of the pack where they can either win or lose a game on any given Saturday. They're not, you know, Georgia or Alabama, you know, quite yet, and maybe never. So they are one of the teams I know for a fact advocating for the 8-game so they can keep Louisville, so they can still compete, you know, at kind of the same rate, if not better. But they're going to come in knowing, man, they got to take advantage of this year when they have the quarterback they really want. They have really good receivers. They were able to do, you know, a really damn good job at retaining their pieces from leaving for the portal with everything that's kind of enticing at other schools right now. So, you know, I think that's why it's very businesslike this year. You know, Stoops is not giving out any, you know, shout outs to any specific players and hyping his team up too much. He's keeping them level headed. He's got his OC back. So they know this is a massive, massive opportunity they've got to cash in on. And again, we'll talk about it more throughout the offseason when things break, but it's going to get even the SEC is already hard, not just because Texas and Oklahoma are coming, but the way it's going to impact scheduling is going to make it even harder.
Yep. Exactly right. Exactly right. For those who enjoyed this episode, everybody go to Believe.com. You can get this episode, all our past episodes, all our upcoming episodes, Put it out on YouTube as well so people can watch it. So tell your friends about it. Go to Apple Podcasts, search for Believe in Kentucky, subscribe. It'll come straight to your device. If you want to leave a comment about what you think about the show or a star rating, we'd appreciate that as well. I appreciate everybody that takes the time to listen. For Jalen Whitlow, Aaron Gershaw, my name is Vinny Hardy. We'll see y'all next week talking more spring football and whatever else happens between now and then on Believe in Kentucky. We'll talk to y'all next time.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.